East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood. Adapted for radio in 7 parts by Michael Baker. With Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moira Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Leveson, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Sir Francis Leveson has foolishly returned to West Lynne to stand as an MP, only to find himself arrested for the murder of Mr. Halligan. Clouds of impending tragedy have gathered over East Lynne as little William grows steadily weaker. East Lynne, Part 7, Until Eternity.
While a sense of foreboding pervaded East Lynne, retribution had overtaken the proud Sir Francis Leveson. His diamond ring shone out conspicuously on his white hand as the handcuff closed round his wrist. The crowd fell back in consternation. His agitation was pitiable to witness, his face a terror to look upon. Once or twice he gasped as if in agony, and then his eyes happened to fall on Otway Bethel, who stood near him.
You hound! It is you who have done this!
No, by thunder! I swear to you,
Mr. Otway Bethel, I arrest you as an accomplice in the murder of George Hallijohn.
Me? What in the name of hell do you suppose I have to do with it?
That'll be for the magistrates to decide, Mr. Bethel.
I swear that I am innocent.
Well, sir, you only have to prove it. And now, if you'd be so good, gentlemen, we'll be off to the station house. It's for your own good. The crowd's starting to get a bit restive.
Oh, Mama, take comfort. Richard is innocent, and it will surely be proved so now. Do not agitate yourself. It will make you ill.
Archibald, tell me the truth. Is this really happening? Is the time come to prove my boy's innocence?
It is.
It is possible that it can be that false, bad man who is guilty.
For my soul, I believe him to be so. But what I say to you and Barbara, I would not say to the world. Whatever be the man's guilt, I am not his nemesis. Dear Mrs. Hare, take courage. Happier days are coming to you.
What is it?
Forgive me for disturbing you, Carlyle, but we must have a word with you.
Yes, I will come to be. Take care of her, my darling.
Well, what has happened,
Manchester?
The inevitable, I should say. Leveson's party have withdrawn his name as candidate. Ah.
And they do not propose to submit another.
They're deeply mortified, and rightly so. Leveson never had a shadow of a chance from the first, even without this little interruption.
You must show yourself to the crowd from the balcony, Carlyle. They're going wild.
Very well, if I must, then.
Yes, come along.
One of the witnesses to Sir Francis' downfall had been Affy Hallijohn. She had gone to the hustings in all her glory, a green and white checked sarsenet flounced up to the waist over a crinoline extending to unknown dimensions, a fancy bonnet, and delicate white gloves, bold as a sunflower. She had fainted when the handcuffs had been put on Sir Francis, but being of an elastic nature, had recovered soon enough, and gone to seek consolation from Mr. Joseph Jiffin, a respectable young man, proprietor of a respectable and profitable establishment in the cheese, ham, and butter line.
I thought you would have shut up your shop today, Mr. Jiffin. Taking a holiday.
Business must be attended to, miss. Had I known that you were abroad, Miss Hallijohn, and enjoying a holiday, perhaps I might have taken one too.
Oh, Mr. Jiffin.
The greatest pleasure I have in life, Miss Hallijohn, is to see you go by the shop window. I'm sure it's as if the sun itself passed by.
Oh, what's all that shouting about?
It's the voters cheering Mr. Carlyle. I suppose you know he's been elected.
No, I don't.
The other was withdrawn by his friends, and Mr. Carlyle is our member. God bless him, there's not many like him.
Well, I mustn't keep you. You must have plenty to do. I won't stay talking any longer.
Good day, Miss Hallijohn.
I wouldn't be such a bad catch after all. Of course, I'd never put my nose inside the shop. Unless it was to order things like any other customer. The shop would be his department. Rest of the house, mine. What's the good of a husband, except to work for you? The worst is the name Jiffin. Oh, how could I ever bear to be called Mrs. Joe Jiffin?
Miss Affy Hallijohn?
Yes, that's me. What are you after, Constable?
I'm after you, Miss Hallijohn. I have instructions to take you along to the Justice Room.
Take me to the Justice Room? Whatever for?
The magistrates want to question you, miss. Here's the subpoena.
Well, I can't come now. I've got an aunt who's very ill in Limburgh. I've got to go there by the next train.
Come on, Miss Affy, let's have no nonsense. You're to go before the magistrates.
Now, Mr. James, will you tell what you know of Sir Francis Levison?
Of Sir Francis Levison, I know precious little. I used to know him as Captain Thorne.
Did you speak with him as Thorne?
2 or 3 times. I addressed him as Thorne, and he answered to the name. I had no suspicion but that it was his name. Upway Bethel also knew him as Thorne.
Was anyone else?
Poor Hallijohn himself knew him as Thorne. He said to Affy one day in my presence that he would not have that confounded dandy Thorne come in here.
What took Thorne so often into Abbey Wood?
He was caught in Affy.
With intention of marrying her?
Well, no. I should not suppose he entertained any intention of that sort.
Did you see him there on the night of Hallijohn's murder?
No, I was not there that evening.
Did a suspicion cross your mind at any time that he may have been guilty of the murder?
Never. Richard Hare was accused of it, and it never occurred to me that he had not done it.
Thank you, Mr. James. Are there any questions you wish to put to the witness, Mr. Rubeny?
Oh, there are indeed. Mr. James, how many years ago did the incidents you've been describing take place?
I can't be sure without reckoning up a dozen, if not more.
And you mean to tell us that you can swear to Sir Francis Levison being that man with all those years intervening?
I swear he is the same man.
Without having seen him from that time until this?
I did not say that.
Have you seen him between then and now?
In London, some 18 months after the murder.
Did you have any communication with him?
Oh, none at all. I only saw him, quite by chance.
Well, whom did you suppose him to be, Thorne or Levison?
Why, Thorne? I never dreamt of his being Levison until he appeared here to oppose Mr. Carlyle.
I put it to you, Mr. James, that you may have been mistaken to the identity of the man you saw in London. It may not have been the man you knew here as Thorne.
I was not mistaken. I am on oath.
Thank you, Mr. James. Let the next witness be called.
Call Miss Hallijohn. What is your name?
Affy.
Your name in full, if you please.
Aphrodite Hallijohn. You know my name as well as I do. What's the use of asking senseless questions?
Swear the witness.
I won't be sworn.
You must be sworn, young woman.
I say I won't.
Then we must commit you to prison for contempt of court.
Miss Hallijohn, have you a hand in the murder of your father?
How dare you ask me such an unnatural question, sir? I loved him dearly. I would have saved his life with mine.
And yet you refuse to give evidence that might bring his killer to justice.
Oh, I don't refuse on that score. I gladly go to see his killer hanged. But who knows what other questions you might be asking me about things that concern neither you nor anyone else.
We only have to deal with what concerns the murder.
Well, you may swear me then.
Take the book in your right hand.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Mr. Ball,
how did you become acquainted with a gentleman named Captain Thorne?
There! You're beginning already. He had nothing to do with the murder.
You have sworn to answer the questions put. How did you become acquainted with Captain Thorne?
I met him at Swainson. I went over there one day, just for a spree. And I met him at a pastry cook's.
And he fell in love with your beautiful face?
Yes, he did.
He got out of you where you lived and entered upon his courting, riding over nearly every evening to see you.
Well, there was no harm in it.
Oh, certainly not. He was to be envied. Did you know him at that time by the name of Levison?
No. He said he was Captain Thorne, and I thought he was.
And how long was it after your first meeting with him before you discovered his real name?
Not for a long time. Several months.
It was after the murder, I presume?
Oh, yes. Sometime after.
Besides Captain Thorne, what gentlemen were in the wood on the night of the murder?
Richard Hare was there, Otway Bethel, and Loxley also.
And which of the two, Richard Hare or Thorne, was inside the cottage with you that evening?
You are upon your oath, witness. If it was my If it was Richard Hare who was with you, say so.
It was Thorne, Mr. Hare.
And where was Richard Hare?
I don't know. He came down, but I sent him away.
Did he leave a gun with you?
Yes, it was the one he promised to lend my father. I put it down just inside the door. He told me it was loaded.
How long after this was it before your father interrupted you?
He never interrupted us at all. I never saw my father until I saw him dead. Captain Thorne and I went for a stroll in the wood. He wished me goodbye and I stayed out.
What was it that Captain Thorne had to get from the cottage after he left you? What did he left there?
He left his hat there. It was a warm evening and he'd gone out without it.
He told you, I believe, sufficient to convince you of the guilt of Richard Hare.
I didn't want convincing. I knew it without. Everybody else knew it.
Well, did Captain Thorne see it done? Did he tell you that?
He'd taken his hat and he was away down the wood some little distance when he heard voices in dispute in the cottage, and he recognised one of them as my father. The shot followed close upon it.
And when did Thorne tell you this?
Same night, much later.
Well, how came you to see him?
A boy came up to the cottage and he called me. He told me that a strange man wanted to see me in the wood. I went out and I found Captain Thorne. I told him Richard Hare had killed my father. He said that now I spoke of him, he could recognise Richard Hare as having been the other voice he'd heard in the dispute.
Well, you look at the prisoner, Sir Francis Levison. Is it he whom you knew as Thorne?
Yes. That doesn't make him guilty of murder.
Of course it does not. How long did you remain with Captain Thorne in London? When you quitted this place after the tragedy, it was to join Captain Thorne in London. How long did you remain with him?
Who says I was with him? Who says I went after him?
I do.
Oh.
Come, it's all over and done with. It's of no use to deny it now.
I never heard of anything so bold.
You are upon your oath, woman. Were you with the prisoner Levison? Or were you with Richard Hare?
I with Richard Hare. And soon be with Calcroft the hangman.
Answer the question. Were you with Thorne?
Yes.
And did you remain with him, say, 2 or 3 years?
Not 3.
A little over 2, perhaps.
Well, there was no harm in it.
I'm not insinuating any. And during that time, did you know him to be Levison?
Yes, I did. He told me he'd called himself Thorne when I met him at Swainston, on the spur of the moment. He never thought to retain it, or that other people would hear him by it.
Thank you, Miss Alijohn. Any questions, Mr. Rubini?
No questions.
Then call the next witness. Call Mr. Dill. Mr. Dill. Will you be good enough to tell the justices what you deposed with me in the office the other evening?
Certainly, Mr. Ball. It was last Tuesday evening. I was returning home after spending an hour or two with Mr. Beecham when I heard a commotion. It was bright moonlight and I could distinctly see Francis Levison and Otway Bethel. Bethel accused Sir Francis of shirking him. Sir Francis replied that he wished to know nothing of him, and then I heard Bethel say, "You were glad enough to know something of me the night of Harry John's murder. One little word from me could hang you."
I must protest. This is quite inadmissible.
Proceed, Mr. Dill.
And then Sir Francis said that Bethel could not hang him without putting his own head in the noose. Had he not had enough hush money, I think, he said.
This is not evidence.
Silence, sir. Go on, Dill.
Bethel said it was only a paltry £50, and he wished he had never taken it. He said that he had never been able to look Mrs. Hare in the face since, knowing that he held the secret that could save her son from the hangman.
Oh, God! This whole proceeding is contrary to law. It is hearsay evidence and cannot be admitted in these proceedings.
We know perfectly well what the law is, Mr. Rubini. We do not need any stranger to come down here and tell us. I find there is sufficient evidence for the prisoners to be committed on a charge of willful murder.
The prisoners were brought forth to be conveyed to Lynborough. A whole posse of constables was necessary to protect them against the mob. cowering like the guilty culprit he was, Sir Francis Levison hid his white face, wondering whether he was to be torn asunder piecemeal, and cursing the earth because it did not open and let him in. Summer came, and soon would be waning too, for the hot days of July were now in. As the months passed by, so little William was rapidly falling away, and as the life in him faded, so did Lady Isabel. The cross had been too heavy, and she was sinking under its weight. Can you wonder at it? There appeared to be no ostensible disease, but she was wasting away day by day, as her mother had done before her. Had anyone inquired what her malady was, she would have answered, a broken heart. Affie Hallijohn had not shone out particularly well in the eyes of West Lynne at the examination. She stood convicted, if not of perjury, something very like it. Some were convinced by her. Her warmest advocate was Mr. Joe Jiffin, who laid himself, his hand, and his cheesemongery at her feet. She was sailing up the street towards his establishment one hot July day when she espied Mr. Carlyle.
Mr. Carlyle!
Effie, good morning to you.
Is it true?
Is what true, Alan?
That Richard Hare is to be tried also. Everyone in West Lynne is saying
as to whether he is to be tried, I cannot say, but yes, it is true. He has surrendered himself to the magistrate.
I don't know anything about it myself, though they say Otway Bethel has turned Queen's evidence. He's always a shifty rogue.
I hear that you're to be married at last, Alan.
Tiffin fancies so, sir. I'm not sure yet, but I shall change my mind. Tiffin thinks there's nobody like me. I could eat gold and silver, he provide it. And he's as fond can be. But then, you know, sir, he's half soft. Though he do make plenty of money.
Take care you don't spend all of his money for him.
Oh, I take care of that. Sir,
What
is the matter with Joyce?
I don't know, Effie. There does appear to be something the matter with her. She is much changed.
I never saw anybody so changed in my life. I told her the other day, she was just like someone who had a dreadful secret upon her mind.
Yes, it really is more like that than anything else, yes.
She's one of the quiet ones, is Joyce. She told me to mind my own business, not take absurd fancies in my head. Still, time will tell, I expect. And I mustn't keep you here gossiping. I'll be seeing you tomorrow, I expect.
Tomorrow?
In Limbra, at the trial.
Oh.
Call Richard Hare.
Oh, Richard Hare!
Order! Order!
Silence,
Silence, all of you! If there's any more noise, I'll clear the court. What is your name?
Richard Hare.
Son of Mr. Justice Hare of West Lynne?
His only son.
The same against whom a verdict of willful murder is out?
The same, my lord.
Then, witness, let me warn you that you are not obliged to answer any questions that might tend to criminate yourself.
My lord, I wish to answer any and every question put to me. I have but one hope, that the full truth of all connected with that fateful evening may this day be made manifest.
Very well. Proceed.
Mr. Hare, look at the prisoner. Do you know him?
I know him now as Sir Francis Levison. Up to April last, I believed his name to be Thorne.
State what happened on the evening of the murder, so far as your knowledge goes.
I had an appointment with Affie Hallijohn, and went down to their cottage to keep it. I took my gun, for I had promised to lend it to Hallijohn while his own was being repaired. When I reached the cottage, Affie refused to admit me. She was busy, she said. I felt sure she had Thorne with her.
May I inquire, what was the nature of your friendship with Miss Hallijohn?
I loved her with an honourable love, as might I have loved any young lady in mine own station in life. I would not have married her in opposition to my father and mother, but I told Affy that if she was content to wait for me until I was my own master, I would then make her my wife.
Now relate the occurrences of the evening.
We had a few words over Affy's refusal to admit me. At length I went away. I gave her the gun and told her that it was loaded. She put it against the wall just inside the door, and I went into the wood and waited, determined to see whether Thorne was there with her. Locksley saw me there and asked why I was hiding. I did not answer, but went further off, out of view of the cottage. Sometime afterwards, I heard a shot. Someone was having a late shot at the partridges, I thought. Just then, I saw Otway Bethel emerge out of the trees, not far from me, and run toward the cottage. My lord, the shot I heard was the one that killed Hallijohn.
Could the shot have been fired by Otway Bethel?
It could not. It was much too far off. Bethel disappeared, and then someone came flying down the path leading from the cottage. It was Thorne. His face was livid, his eyes were staring, and he panted and shook as if with the ague. Afterwards, I heard the sound of his horse galloping away. It had been tied up in the wood.
Did you try to follow him?
No. All I wanted was to go back to the cottage to ask Affy why she had lied about Thorne. I leapt over the two steps and fell over the body of Hallijohn. He was lying dead within the door. My gun, just discharged, was flung on the floor, its contents in Hallijohn's side. There appeared to be no one in the cottage, upstairs or down. I called to Affy, but there was no answer. I caught up the gun and was running from the cottage when Locksley came out of the wood and looked at me. I threw the gun back again and made off.
And then what happened?
In my flight, I came upon Bethel. I knew that if he had gone towards the cottage after the shot was fired, he must have met Thorne flying from it. He denied that he had done so, and said that he had only gone along the path for a few yards, and had then plunged into the wood again. I believed him and departed.
Departed from West Lynn?
Yes, that same night. It was a foolish, fatal step, the result of cowardice.
Call Otway Bethel!
Call Otway Bethel!
Will you tell the court what happened on the night of the murder of George Hallijohn?
On that evening, I was in Abbey Wood, and I saw Richard Hare come down the path with a gun as if he had come from his own home.
Did Richard Hare see you?
No, he could not see me. I was right in the thicket. He went to the cottage door and was about to enter when Affy Hallijohn came out of it, pulled the door behind her, and held it in her hand as if she was afraid he would try to go in. Some words passed between them, but I was too far off to hear what they were saying. Then she took the gun from him and went in. Some time after that, I saw Richard Hare standing in the trees farther from the cottage than I was, and apparently watching the path. I was wondering what he was up to, hiding there, when I heard a shot fired close to the cottage, as it seemed, and
could
when I...
that shot have been fired by Richard Hare?
It could not. He was nearly a quarter of a mile from it. I was much nearer the cottage than he.
Go on.
Well, I set off to see what had happened, and as I turned the corner and could see the house, I saw Captain Thorne, as he was called, come leaping out of it. I never saw a living face so white with terror. Well, when he caught sight of me and realized I must have heard the shot and guessed who'd fired it, in desperation he pressed £50 upon me, thinking to buy my silence. I took the note and answered, silence it should be. I had not the least idea that anyone had been killed.
And so, you took a bribe to conceal one of the foulest crimes that ever man committed.
I took the money, and I'm ashamed to confess it. But it was done without reflection. I swear that if I had known what crime it was intended to hush up, I never would have touched it.
It appears then, Mr. Bethel, that you have retained within you all these years the proof of Richard Hare's innocence.
I can only acknowledge it with contrition, my lord. Silence in court! Silence in court!
Foreman of the jury, are you agreed upon your verdict?
We are, my lord.
And how say you? Guilty or not guilty?
Guilty. But we wish to recommend him to mercy.
On what grounds?
Because, my lord, we believe that it was not a crime planned by the prisoner beforehand, but arose out of the bad passions of the moment, and was so committed.
Prisoner at the bar, have you anything to urge why sentence of death should not be passed upon you?
Only this, my lord. The jury, in giving their reason for recommending me to your lordship's mercy, have adopted the right view of the case as it actually occurred. That I took Hallijohn's life, it will be useless for me to deny. But it was not taken in malice. When I left the girl and went back to the cottage, I no more contemplated injuring mortal man than I contemplated at this moment. Hallijohn was there, and in the dispute that ensued, the catastrophe occurred. My lord, it was not willful murder.
Prisoner at the bar, you have been convicted by clear and undoubted evidence of the crime of willful murder. It was a foul, a barbarous, a wicked act. Your counsel has urged that you are a gentleman, a member of the British aristocracy, and therefore deserve consideration. In my opinion, your position in life makes your crime the more terrible. Certain portions of the evidence given today tell very greatly against you. You were pursuing the daughter of this man with no honorable purpose, and in this pursuit, you killed her father, and not content with that, you pursued her to her ruin, laying the crime upon another. Uncalled, unprepared, and by you unpitied, you hurried that unfortunate man into eternity. The jury have recommended you to mercy, and the recommendation will be forwarded to the proper quarter. It now only remains for me to pass upon you the dread sentence of the law. It is that you, Francis Levison, be taken back to the place from whence you came, and thence to the place of execution, and that you there be hanged by the neck until you are dead. And may the Lord God Almighty have mercy upon your immortal soul.
Richard, you're clean, you're innocent, you can come home.
Yes, Mother, I can come home.
My boy. My boy. Forgive me.
Dear Father, it is forgiven and forgotten already.
Oh, Richard, to think I swore to deliver you to justice. To think I might...
Father! Father!
It was the day following the trial. Mr. Justice Hare had been brought to West Lynne following his stroke, and Barbara Carlyle had gone to see him to console her mother and to welcome Richard to his home again. At East Lynne, by the side of William Carlyle's dying bed, knelt the Lady Isabel. The time was at hand, and the boy was quite reconciled to his fate. Merciful indeed is God to dying children. It is astonishing how very readily, where the right means are taken, they may be brought to look with pleasure rather than fear upon their unknown journey.
I wonder how it will be. There will be a beautiful city with its gates of pearl. There will be harps and music and singing. And I shall be happy forever, never to be tired or ill again.
And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. And neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away.
Madame V, do you think Mama will be there? I mean, Mama ever was.
Aye. Ella.
How shall I know her? You see, I have nearly forgotten what she was like.
Oh, you will know her never fear, William. She has not forgotten you.
But how can we be sure that she will be there? You know, she isn't quite good.
Oh, William, her whole life after she left you was one long scene of repentance. Her repentance and her sorrow was greater than she could bear.
What makes you think it?
Oh, child, I know it.
But you could only know that by her telling you. Did you ever see her? Did you know her mother abroad?
Oh, yes. Yes, I knew her abroad.
Why did you never tell us? What did she say? What was she like?
She said that she was parted from her children here. But she should meet them in heaven and be with them forever. Oh, William, darling, all the awful pain and sadness and guilt of this world will be washed out, and God will wipe our tears away.
What was her face like?
Oh, like yours, very much like Lucy.
Was she pretty?
Yes.
Papa!
Mr. Carlyle.
How is he, Madame Jean? Is he worse?
He appears weaker this evening, sir.
Papa?
Yes, William, what is it?
Is Joyce here?
No, she is at the Hares. The Justice has been taken ill. I'll send her home to you. I'm going there for your Mama shortly.
For Mama?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Papa, how shall I know Mama in heaven? Not this Mama.
What do you mean?
She will be in heaven, you know.
Yes. Yes, child.
Madame V knows she will. She saw her abroad.
Mm-hmm.
She told her that she wanted all of us for that.
What is the child speaking of, Madame V?
I beg your pardon, sir. As though, only as I thought it must be. The boy seemed troubled about his mother.
Did you ever meet his mother abroad?
No, sir.
Do you perceive the change in his countenance?
Oh, yes, sir, yes. He has looked like this since a strange fit of trembling came on him this afternoon. At least some 4 and 20 hours we ended.
It's hard to lose him.
Oh, sir, he will be better off. We can bear death. It is not the worst party that the earth knows. He will be quit of this cruel world, sheltered in heaven. I wish we all were.
William, I'm going to the Hares to bring Mama back. I'll send Joyce.
Papa, say goodbye to me.
I shall not be long, my darling. And I shall not leave you again tonight when I'm back.
And goodbye, Papa.
I'll be back as soon as I can, Madame Vine. Send for Wilson if you want anything.
Yes, sir.
Goodbye.
Oh, William. Oh, William, my darling. Let me be to you your mother.
Papa's going to fetch her.
Oh, not her.
No. Not even at that last hour, when the world was closing in on her child. Dad, she said, I am your mother. She fell on her knees in prayer. A review of the past then rose up before her. Her first meeting with Mr. Carlyle. Her father dying in agony while the bats fluttered at the windows. She remembered returning to the house as the bride of Mr. Carlyle. Her jealousy of Barbara Hare, her flight with a man who now sat alone facing the gallows. And it was she who had brought all this to pass.
Madame Green?
Yes.
Mr. Carlyle said that Master William had been asking for me. He told me to...
What is it, Joyce? She's gone. William. Oh, William. Oh, William. Oh, I did not see him go. Oh, William. William, come back. Come back to me, my darling child. Oh, come back to me that I may say farewell. Oh, my darling, darling child, come back to your mother. Oh, William, William, stole you. Oh,
leave him. Leave him for the love of heaven, milady. Milady! Milady, let me take you to your room. Mr. Carlyle has come. He's bringing up his wife. Only think if you should get away before them. Take him away.
Did he know me?
Oh, my lady. It was the night after you brought Master William back from the doctor at Lynbrough. The night I fear when you first suspected he must die. You were pacing the gallery alone in the moonlight. You thought that no one could see you. And your face wasn't disguised. I thought you were a spectre, my dead lady. And then I saw that it was you indeed.
Oh, Joyce, I could not keep away from my unhappy children. Do you think it's been no punishment for me to be here? To see my husband, the husband of another? It is killing me.
Oh, my lady. Come away. You're coming. Quickly. Go to my room. Go now.
What is it? What's the matter?
You must prepare yourself for the worst. Master William.
He's not dead, Joyce. William. Yes, come. Yes. Come. Oh, God, receive this child to his rest in Jesus. Even as I trust thou hast already received his unhappy mother.
William was laid to rest in the Carlyle vault. Lady Isabel was ill. Ill in mind and ominously ill in body. In returning to East Lynne, she had entered upon a daring act, and she found in the working that neither strength nor spirit was up to it.
From the very night she had come back to East Lynne, her love for Mr. Carlyle had burst forth with an intensity never before felt. Her heart, you see, had not done with human passions, and they work ill and error and everything they should not. You may say she ought never to have returned. But are you sure? Are you quite sure that you might not have done the same? Faced with the same temptation?
Come in.
Mrs. Carlyle tells me that you've been speaking to her of leaving. That you find yourself too much out of health to continue with this.
Yes, sir.
What is it that you find to be the matter with you?
I think it is chiefly weakness.
You have become ill at East Lynne in attendance on my children. You must allow me to insist that you consult a doctor.
A doctor could not cure me. Nor, as I believe, prolong my life.
Oh, no. You must see him. I'm positive you will soon recover. I'll send for him now. How shall I repay you? I thank you for your love to my poor lost boy. Do not grieve for him. He's at rest. Thank you greatly for all your sympathy.
Miss Effie?
Oh, it's you. Really, Mr. Giffin, I should feel obliged if you would not come out to me in this offensive and public fashion.
Offensive? I do hope I've not been so unfortunate as to offend you, Miss Effie.
Well, you see, I've been thinking it over, Giffin, and I find that to go ahead with a marriage would not be for my... well, for our happiness.
You don't mean to give me up?
Well, yes, I do. It is good to be plain. I'll shake hands now with you, Giffin, for the last time, and I'm very sorry that we have both made such a mistake.
But you can't mean it. There isn't anything I wouldn't do to please you. You are the light of my existence.
I know, but it's all done and over. A butter and bacon factory is not what I've been accustomed to. And those aprons.
I'll give them up altogether. I'll get a second shopman to buy a little gig and do nothing but drive you about.
Your intentions are very kind, but I've made up my mind. So farewell for good, Mr. Giffin.
I've bought the ring.
Why, Richard, what are you up to? Surely you're not going to pass an old friend. Have you forgotten the old days?
No, I have not. And I'm not likely to do so.
Oh, I felt certain of that. When you went off that dreadful night, I thought I should have died. I have never had a happy moment since, till this moment, when I meet you again.
Oh, don't be a fool, Affy. I was young and green once. You don't suppose I have remained so? We will drop the past, if you please. How is Mr. Giffin?
Oh, could you bear to see me stooping to him? Oh, Richard. Remember what we once were to one another.
I was an idiot once, Affy. I don't deny it. But you cured me of that, and you cured me with a vengeance. It won't do, Affy.
Oh, it is my recompense for the years I spent pining after you. Keeping single for your sake.
If you want recompense, Affy, I'll get my mother to give Giffin her custom. And now, good day.
Miss Effie!
Oh, Mr. Giffin! I've been walking too fast in the sun. Permit me to sit down for a few minutes.
Of course, Miss Effie.
I'll recover in a moment.
Can I offer you a glass of wine, Miss Effie?
You see, I fooled you. Didn't I do well?
What? What are you talking about, Effie?
Oh, by telling you, it was all off.
You mean it isn't?
It was just a joke. What a soft you must have been not to see through it. You can't imagine I'd ever run away from marrying you.
Oh, Miss Affy.
Now, I've been longing to see that ring.
Richard Hare had returned to his home to be its master, for his father, the justice, although he had partially recovered, would never be in a position to hold sway again. One word touching that wretched prisoner in the condemned cell at Lynnborough. As you may have anticipated, the extreme sentence was not carried out. It was commuted to penal servitude for life. In the dim light of his cell, he envied the man he had so thoughtlessly sent into eternity. The doctors were able to do nothing for Lady Isabel. Death was advancing with giant strides. She lay in her bed, life waning with the fading light of the afternoon.
What is it, lady?
I heard footsteps on the gravel outside. Was it Mr. Carlyle?
Yes, my lady.
Oh, I should die happier if I might see him.
See him? Mr. Carlyle? Oh, it could not be, my lady. It must not be.
I can't die for the trouble. Keep my children from me. They must not come, you say, lest I should betray myself. Now you would keep away my husband. Oh, Joyce, let me see.
Is it the master? Joyce, what's all this I hear about Madam Bean? Wilson says she's at death's door.
Oh, ma'am, you mustn't come in.
Who is to keep me out? Move away, girl. I think your brain must be softening. I will see her. So that's what the glasses and bonnet were meant to conceal. Oh, mercy be good to us.
Carlyle.
How could you dare come back here?
My children. How can I stay away from them? Without pity, Miss Carlyle, don't reproach me. I am on my way to God to answer for all my sins.
I do not reproach you.
I am so glad to go. Jesus did not come, you know, to save the good like you. He came for the sake of us, poor sinners. I tried to take up my cross and bear it bravely for his sake. But its weight has killed me.
Child, had I anything to do with sending you from East Lynne?
You did not send me. I was not happy with you, but that was not the cause of my going away. Forgive me, Miss Carlyle. Forgive me.
Forgive me, child. I could have made your home happier, and I wish I had done so. I have wished it ever since you left it.
I want to see Archibald. Pray Joyce to bring him. But she will not. Only for a minute. Just to hear him say, forgive me. What can it matter now I'm as one lost to the world? I should die easier.
Very well.
Madame Bean, I am sorry that... Oh, dear God in heaven.
Archibald, I could not die without your forgiveness. Oh, do not turn from me. Bear with me a little while, and if you forgive me, and I shall die in peace. Forgive me. I did not die. I recovered from the accident, but it changed me dreadfully. I thought that no one would know me. I could not stay away from you and from my children. I never knew a moment's peace after the mad act I was guilty of in leaving you.
Why did you go?
I went out of love for you.
Out of love?
Oh, do not look at me in that way. I loved you dearly, and I grew suspicious of you. I thought you were false and deceitful to me. Your love was all given to another, and in my sore jealousy, I listened to the temptings of that bad man who whispered to me of revenge. It was not so, was it?
How can you ask it? I never was false to you.
Archibald, I was mad. I was mad. I could not have done it in anything but madness. Oh, surely you will forget and forgive.
I cannot forget. I have already forgiven. But why did you come back?
I could not live away from you and my children.
It was wrong, wrong in all ways.
Oh, Archibald, I am on the very threshold of the next world. Will you not bless me? Will you not say a word of love to me before I pass it? Oh, think of me. Think of me if you can as the innocent and timid child you made your wife. Only a word of love. My heart is breaking for you.
You nearly broke mine when you left me, Isabel. May God bless you and take you to his rest in heaven.
His rest. Yes. Oh, yes, I know that God has forgiven me. We shall meet again, and we shall be together with our children forever and ever. Keep a little corner in your heart for your poor, lost Lucifer.
Yes. Yes.
Are you leaving me?
You're growing faint. I must make assistance.
Oh, farewell then. Farewell until eternity. It is death, not faintness. Oh, but it is hard to part. Farewell. Farewell, my once dear husband.
Until eternity.
But did you never suspect?
Barbara, had I suspected it, should I have allowed it to go on? She implored my forgiveness for the past and for having returned here. And I forgave her fully. I went to West Lynn to telegraph to Mount Severn. She was dead when I returned. What is it, my dearest?
Oh, Archibald. Has this taken your love from me?
Oh. I thought my wife possessed entire trust in me.
Oh, I do. Forgive me.
My darling, I told it to you in love.
It was a foolish feeling to cross my heart, Archibald. It is done with and gone.
I never let it come back again, Barbara. Neither need her name be mentioned again between us. A barred name it has hitherto been, let it so continue.
Anything you will. My earnest wish is to be worthy of your love and esteem. There has been a feeling in my heart against your children, a sort of jealous feeling, because they were hers. And I have tried earnestly to subdue it. And I think it is nearly gone. I pray to be helped to love and care for them as if they were my own. It will come with time.
every good thing will come with time. But we earnestly see. Oh, Barbara.
Never forget, dear listener, that the only way to ensure peace in the end is to strive always to be doing right, unselfishly, under God.
That was the final part of East Lynne by Mrs. Henry Wood, adapted for radio by Michael Bakewell, with Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Henry Wood, Moya Leslie as the Lady Isabel, David Collins as Mr. Carlyle, Anthony Edridge as Francis Leveson, Maxine Audley as Miss Cornelia, and Julie Barry as Barbara Hare. Little William was played by Ben Robb, Affy by Angela Crowe, Mrs. Hare by Joan Matheson, Justice Hare by Brian Hewlett, Dill by Tim Rattles, Lord Manstaven by Stephen Thorne, Joyce by Joe Kendall, Ball by Peter Aker, James by Michael Tudor Barnes, and Dobede by Colin Starkey. Stephen Harold was Bethel, and Sebastian Stride, Mr. Jiffin. The Usher, Paul Gregory, Rubini, Nicholas Goldwyn, the Clerk, David Goodland, and the Judge, Michael Bilson. The pianist was Martin Goldstein. East Lynne was directed by David Johnson.